Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capon. All the booze news and views, from Absinthe to Zinfandel, tall tales and cocktails.
Hello and welcome to It's the Drink Talking. I'm Sam Capon, aka the Mistress of Wine, and I'm joined by two lovely chaps. On my immediate right is Tom.
Hello, everyone. Hiya.
And anything else you want to add?
No, my name's Tom Sandham. I'm one of the Thinking Drinkers, and I like to talk about and drink spirits predominantly, so that's what I'm here today to do. Although today I'm doing Legend of Liquor, aren't I?
Yeah, you are so. Indeed. And then you're joined by your partner, Ben.
Yeah, he is a partner of sorts, business partner.
But I have desires to be more than that.
More than the secretary.
Yeah, admin. My name is Ben McFarland. I'm one half of the Thinking Drinkers. Thinking Drinkers have a show. I don't know if you've ever mentioned that before. A comedy show which we tour around the country, doing a nationwide tour, London, Luton, all the big places. And I talk about beer, Millom, which I believe the ticket sales are not quite as strong as we'd hoped. Come on, people of Millom.
Millom, what's the spell it?
M-I-L-L-O-M.
Yes.
In Cumbria, I think.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Which is lovely.
Beautiful part of the world.
Wonderful part of the world.
Go for a walk and then watch Thinking Drinkers.
No. Go for a walk and go home, it would seem. Don't go and see us. Anyway,
So that's what we're doing, and I'm going to talk about beer, and we're going to do a lovely tasting of some beers from God's own country.
Lovely, where's that?
Well, I'll tell you when it comes to my bit.
Okay, lovely. In that case, let's push on.
Yes.
I am doing this week's Spit and Swallow, and I'm going to start with my spit.
Oh, what is it, Sam?
Well, you know what? I pride myself on not being in any way a wine snob, and I really do think I'm not. However, there's one thing, /two, that does get my goat, and I'm witnessing it far more in this rather warm weather. See if you can guess what it is.
You can't drink red wine in the sunshine?
No. Nope.
Is it rosé? Something to do with rosé?
Is it people are just drinking, wearing bad clothes?
People are not chilling white wine?
Kind of. Basically, it's people putting ice cubes in their wine. Drives me crazy. A, ice cubes in wine, and B, spritzers.
Yeah, I was going to say, surely ice is all right if you have a spritzer, because you've already
diluted it.
The wine,
yeah,
so.
I don't really understand it. The amount of people go, oh, my wine's too warm, I'll shove a load of ice cubes in. A, have you not heard of those ice cubes that are reusable that don't dilute your drink, the little plastic cubes? Lakeland have 16 reusable fruits for a mere £3.99, or reusable ice cubes, 24 for £5.79. If you want to snazz it up a bit, you can get some steel ice cubes for like 30 quid. Beautiful, like metal ones that you can put in
they
a drink.
They look like little dice.
They look like little dice. And they're quite cute.
And we will on stage.
But I just don't get it. It's like, if it's hot, possibly you have what's called a fridge or a freezer or an ice bucket, or I referenced before the corker cool, and you get those sleeves. There's just so many things you can do to keep your drink cool. Put ice cubes in your wine and you dilute the wine, and you're going to be left with a watery wine. Just wait 10 minutes, stick it in the freezer. Or fill an ice bucket up. Maybe just drink a beer instead. Or if you're worried about the alcohol, just have a lower alcohol drink.
Can I just say you're the wine person? You shouldn't be just going, I drink it.
basically, I would rather have a beer than a watered-down wine. Because a watered-down wine is going to taste a cack. So just don't bother. Obviously, it is all down to personal preference. If wine is too strong for you or you have a real intolerance to alcohol, there obviously are situations and reasons why someone might
want... You're driving.
Probably don't. Or just have one really nice glass and then stick to water.
Have a water chaser.
A water chaser. I'm a big fan of one and one, but I just don't get it. For me, I drink wine because I love the taste of it. Like, it's delicious. You know, I don't drink loads of it because of health, calories, But basically, when I have a glass of wine, I'm not drinking to get hammered. I'm drinking it because it's delicious and civilised and it's a nice intro.
It's funny because you don't see wine used in the world of cocktails. What we see, vermouth, obviously, which is a wine. They use wines in there. But you were keen to say I'm not a snob at the start of this bit. But it does seem like quite a sacred thing that you don't muck about with wine, really, do you? It's just it is what it is, and enjoy it.
But let's just say it is a £7 bottle of wine. Now, we would be lying to our listeners if you suggested that that can't be in some way diluted or manipulated for one's enjoyment, because really you're not talking about a particularly good wine.
£7
£7
Oh, all right. £5 then.
You can get wine for £3.99, mate. Trust me.
Yes, I know, but what I'm saying is that you could have a shandy, you could have a whiskey with water. But whiskey connoisseurs would get their knickers in a twist about serving it with ice or water. But with wine, you're like, well, it's £7, I want to enjoy it.
Well, I think what I'm saying is, if it's for temperature control, that's no excuse. Use an ice bucket, use a fridge, use these ice things.
You know when you're going to be drinking a wine.
Yeah, and people are like, oh, my wine's, you know, my wine's just a bit too warm.
What
I'm going to chuck ice in.
In a pub.
Well, in a pub, you want a glass of wine, but you're going to get potentially not the best wine in a glass, and you're going to be there.
You've ordered a glass of white wine in a pub in the summer. It needs to be chilled. They need to have got their...
They need to have their fridges working, which they should do.
The best cocktail bars, when they serve up their cocktails, they'll give them in chilled cocktail glasses that have been in the freezer, so they've frosted, and that keeps you the temperature right for the duration of your drink.
I just said to my husband the other day, I said, we want to get a new freezer. The excitement in the Cape Horn household, we really need one. And I said, I want to give a whole shelf dedicated to glassware, so that we always have cold champagne glasses, wine glasses, tumblers, beer glasses, because a cold glass is good. But yeah, I mean, that was it. It just, if it's too warm, plan ahead. If you actually, you're being responsible or what have you, and obviously it's fine, I would suggest drink less wine, drink more water, and drink the wine as it's meant to be.
Okay.
So that's my spit. Then my swallow, it's kind of encapsulates a couple of things, but I think I'll call it innovation. So I went to Portugal recently on a little trip.
For the listeners, Sam just missed her chair and wobbled a bit. We haven't had a drink yet.
So basically, I went to Portugal recently to learn about the production of cork. And it was very interesting, and I learned quite a lot of different things. But a couple of things I found quite interesting, one of which is the whole marrying of art and science and history. So I met up with an old friend yesterday who I haven't seen since about 18, and we were talking about how when we were at school, there's no mobile phones, there was no internet, and you know, if you went to a party or something and someone didn't turn up, you couldn't track them. Basically, how much has changed even since we were at school to now. And then you have something like wine, which is still quite romantic, and it's, you know, it's been made for hundreds and hundreds of years, and you know, really marries sort of art and science. But what's quite interesting in the cork industry is they've had to really pull their socks up, because in the sort of 1990s, the screw caps came on the scene, and people were saying, you know, cork is dead, and doing little kind of fake funerals for it. And then two things I learned when I was in Portugal, which I thought were really interesting, was that when I was doing my master of wine, no one really understood kind of how wine aged, and also how oxygen gets into the bottle. So if you think about it, lots of really expensive red wines will all be bottles with a cork. And everyone kind of understands that that is the best closure for a smart red wine. But no one really understands why. And then recently they found out. Because when you push a cork into the bottle of wine, it's got millions and millions and millions of cells in it, and some oxygen gets released into the wine through the actual application of shoving the cork in.
So that is good for the oxygenization. Yeah. Just a very little amount.
Yeah, small amount.
Because I always thought it was because it was, in fact, an imperfect closure.
No.
And that bit by bit over the years, enough oxygen got in to ameliorate the wine, not enough to make it.
Right, which I think, which is what was the complication. Because I think, basically, certain Stelvin screw caps are totally impermeable, like nothing can get in. So is that good? Is it bad? And then same with cork. There's kind of an understanding that maybe somehow it is a different closure and something's getting in. And you have different grades of cork. So if you had like a premium natural cork, you know, nothing should be able to get in. So what's interesting is they finally found out fairly recently that it's the oxygen is coming in from within the actual cork and inserting it into the bottle.
So it's because the cork gets squeezed and it pushes it out.
Like a little fart, like a cork
accordion.
Fart. Yeah, yeah.
I like, now, yeah, accordions.
The wine geek, found that really fascinating because that had never been understood. And I met this amazing R&D guy at one of the cork companies, and I think his boss was asking him some questions and said, you know, so what about this question? And the guy kind of went red and said, oh, I don't know. So he sent he basically employed someone to go to France and do some research to answer this question specifically, who did a PhD on it.
What I love about it is it's the same in whiskey. They all use the same yeast in whiskey, distiller's yeast. And I won't bore the listeners too much with the science of it, but I didn't really understand why they wouldn't use different yeast. And the general consensus was, look, we don't understand everything about this. Yeah. We don't understand how the yeast will performed by the end of the distillation and what happens with the wood interaction. There are still a lot of mysteries in all of these things, whiskey and wine. The fact that we've been using that for centuries and people have just found out is...
But also, this is this idea that you can control so much and then there's this last small element that is linked to romance. Because let's be honest, even I, as a consumer of wine, totally understand that what the screw cap delivers and the benefits of it, and the fact that, what is it, 1 in 12 bottles could be caught.
It's about 5%.
Right.
Okay. That might be 1 in 20. 1 in 20. Yeah. 1 in 20. Either way.
Good maths.
That was not bad.
Yeah, you got away with it.
GCC. 1 out of 20. Even though that's a high hit rate, if I had a bottle of red and it was a screw cap and a bottle of red that was cork, and they were the same price.
You go for the cork.
I still go for the cork. Just because it looks... Unless, of course, I was going to drink it al fresco on my own on a bench.
Now I'm starting to wonder how those corks go in and the process of that and how that might differ and how that might actually affect wine quality.
It's really complicated. And basically, the closure is not meant to affect the sensory aspect of the wine. But again, it's something looking into it at the moment. So they've did this whole oxygen thing, and now I think they think that there might be a bit of sort of phenolic influence, that the closure does somehow affect the wine a bit and also creates new chemical compounds. So actually might make the wine more complex, might hinder bitterness and do all kinds of cool stuff. So the second part of this, part B, is really interesting, which, going back to your comment on the cork of wine, they have worked out how to make the TCA, which makes the wine corked, basically non-detectable. So they've basically employed a system of gas chromatography to be able to scan the premium corks and they...
See whether it's got anything in
it. Yeah, because actually TCA is so powerful that even at something like 3 nanograms, a nanogram being 1,000 millionths of a gram, you can detect TCA. So they've managed to get it down to 0.5 nanograms, which is basically non-detectable.
That doesn't sound like a lot.
So basically, they have managed to a non-detectable TCA guarantee on corks that go through that particular line that you 100% won't get a corked wine. I think that's amazing. But that took like 10 million
euros.
That's a
game changer.
And what?
Yeah.
What hang on.
Really, 10 million euros.
Okay.
Okay, two more questions about corks.
Yep.
First one.
You can't ask that, Ben.
No. The first one is, what would happen if they soaked a cork in port or something before putting it in to the bottle? Like, could you flavour the wine? Could you, or let's say they wanted more blackcurrant flavour, could you soak that in blackcurrant?
Okay.
No? Okay, second question.
I thought you were going to honour that with a response.
Well, I'm gonna.
What about Ribena?
Ribena. And secondly, I once wrote a thing about corks and spoke to someone in Portugal, and they were banging on about birds. Not as in ladies, but birds going on.
Flora and fauna.
Just the fact that, but there are some birds that rely on cork trees, and I couldn't work out whether he was saying the cork producers are cutting down these trees and the birds have got nowhere to live, or that if we got rid of the cork...
The latter.
The latter. Yeah. So,
so it's basically a massive ecological area and it supports loads of wildlife. And so I think the angle there would be it's incredibly important. These forests sustain loads of life, and if there was no cork and the forests weren't used and they got... houses built on them instead.
It has to be that way around.
Then that would be gone. So, yeah, so it's just,
what else is cork used for?
Oh my God, I know all about that. Aeroplanes, spaceships, trains,
boats,
shoes,
boats.
Canoes,
boats,
insulation, floors. Did you know in the Sagrada Familia in Barcelona, it's got a cork floor?
Cork floor.
Massive.
Yeah, yeah. And I was going to say placemats and floor.
They were my two. And boats.
So the birds are going to be all right. Yeah. Even if the wine industry went, oh, we're going to go screw cap.
It's these really smart natural corks that are the key thing you take from the cork. Oh,
that's the tree. Industry.
And then it's everything else is almost like the
Do you know my worst one? The worst is those synthetic corks. I hate them.
The plastic ones.
Yeah, I hate them. I'm sure they're good. They're always harder to get out. Yeah. And also there's just something...
I agree.
They look look like a suppository.
Yeah.
They do plug a gap.
They do, And that's it. That's my spit and swallow.
Well done.
Corking. It was corking.
Yes.
Thanks, boys.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Tom Sandham from The Thinking Drinkers, and you are listening to It's the Drink Talking.
Welcome back to It's the Drink Talking. We are now moving over to Ben McFarlane for some beer.
Welcome, everybody, because we are now going to be going on a little journey. All of us, Sam, Tom, myself and the listeners, we're going to go to Yorkshire.
Oi, man.
Reet.
No, that's wrong.
Reet. Reet.
No.
Nice.
No, can't do the accent.
Reet. Reet's all right, isn't it? Reet.
No.
Nice up there.
No. It's Rugby League. Tutleeds. Rugby League.
Lloyd.
Yeah. So before we alienate all of them, famous for pudding.
Yep.
It's
love
pudding,
it.
Yorkshire
it's
tea.
A pancake. Mm.
God's own
great
country.
Beers.
5.3 million people live in Yorkshire, and there are more than 100 breweries. But it's not just the quantity of the breweries in Yorkshire. The quality of brewery in Yorkshire, I didn't intend to do this, but I was looking at all the good breweries that were making good stuff, and all of them seemed to be in Yorkshire. And then I thought, hang on, there's a feature here, guys.
Yeah.
And what I think they do very well is they kept their roots in tradition. So they sort of pay homage to tradition, but they're very, very happy to go and experiment and be quite innovative. And you've got some amazing breweries, traditional breweries. You've got Sam Smith's.
Yep.
You know, the Sam Smith pub, very cheap beer. but can be good, can be pretty bad as well, I'll be honest. It fluctuates, but they've got a great history. You've got Black Sheep, amazing brewery, Theakston's, and of course, historically, you've got Tetley and Timothy Taylor.
Tim Taylor,
Landlord. Do you know whose favourite drink that is? Which female pop star?
Madonna.
Yeah. Correct.
You kind of. Which female pop star from the 80s who had a hit about holidays?
So when she was going out with Guy Ritchie, going out, they were married, I think, weren't they?
They were married.
They did get married, yeah.
Yeah. And when she went to that flat cap kind of
era,
she said that her favourite drink was Timothy Taylor Landlord, and they put it on all their lorries, and it was a big thing.
She drank it in the Dog and Duck on Bateman Street in Soho, which is a lovely pub. But you know, I was in there the other day, and they didn't. I would look for the Landlord because it used to always be on there. I couldn't see it.
But they are—it's still a classic.
It's still one of the world classics,
and it's still very good.
I don't think I've had it.
Try it.
Give it a go.
But
just try it.
And then you've got Sheffield and York and Leeds,
lives in Sheffield.
Okay, that's good, thanks.
which one?
Since we've learned. My identical twin sister.
She's the one who is a doctor?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you're ill siblings in Sheffield, then she's the one to go to. But other breweries that are up there that are worth exploring. And there's Kirkstall, Roosters. Been around for ages,
Roosters,
really good.
Their red ales.
Their Yankee IPA is very good. Very aromatic. They were one of the first breweries in the UK to really embrace the sort of American aromatic style. Sean Franklin, who was the original founder, once did a tasting with him where he only used his nose, which is quite interesting.
Oh, cool.
And then you've got Magic Rock in Huddersfield. We've got one of their beers here, but we're going to taste another two. But they've got one called Salty Kiss, which is a gooseberry goose.
We are tasting
ghost.
It.
Oh, you want to taste that?
Really
okay.
Want to taste
all
that.
Right, we can do that.
Yeah.
You've got Ilkley, Kelham Island, who are Dave Wickett,
one of the real
driving force in Sheffield behind the craft brewing scene up there. And you've got Northern Monk Summer Wine, named after the last of the Summer Wine.
Ah, okay.
You know, remember that series where they used to go down the hill in a bath? What's amazing about Yorkshire as well is just the amount of bars up there that specialise in craft beer. You've got Sheffield Tap, Tap Leeds, York Tap. We perform at the Great Yorkshire Fringe and they do some amazing beers as well. You've got some amazing shop beer writs in Leeds, Hop Hideout in Sheffield, and House of Trembling Madness in York as well is a wonderful place. Now, we've long been fans, the Thinking Drinkers, of Leeds as a drinking destination. Began up there for ages. Tom, in fact, had his stag do
there. I did have my stag do there.
Shake Bar, Mojo.
Jägermeister on my table for courtesy of Mal at Mojo, which is another great bar.
But one of the best beer bars is the North Bar in Leeds, and it was started by a man called Christian Townsley, who is involved in North Brewing. And they have collaborated. What's amazing up there as well, there seems to be a huge community of collaborative brewers that are helping each other out. There's obviously rivalry, as there are in any business, but they realise that a rising tide lifts all boats, I think, is the phrase.
Especially if they're made of cork.
Especially if they're made of cork, yes. And pretty much all the beers we have are in cans, which wouldn't have happened
Nice cans as well.
They're lovely.
You've got nice cans there.
So this is called Hit the North, and it's a collaboration between the North Brewing Company that Christian's involved in, who's one of the good guys in the beer business. He's a very nice chap. And Northern Monk. It's an IPA made with different styles of hops and blended with single origin coffee beans from the North Star Coffee Roasters based in Leeds.
It's quite punchy.
Crikey. That is interesting.
So it's a coffee IPA, a white coffee, and they do a black one.
Can I now taste coffee on the finish because you said coffee?
You can
coffee on there?
There's bitterness.
And bitterness.
There's that bitter finish that you get.
Yeah.
But you would get it from hops, but there's a different kind of bitterness that you get from coffee in there. That's really interesting.
I think it's really interesting because when I first read it, I was like, coffee white IPA.
When I used to be a wine buyer and people would come and present me with their wines and I just didn't know what to say because I didn't like it, I'd go, yeah, that's really interesting. And that was my get-out comment on anything. I didn't really know what to say. But presumably mean it's actually really interesting.
No, that is really complex.
Does that work? Is that when you say, when I'm telling you about like a legend of liquor, that's really interesting? That means
I sometimes say, wow. So if listeners are picking that up, that's when I don't really mean anything. So if you've heard me say that to either of these two listeners, if you hear wow, it means I couldn't give a shit.
It's distinctive, that's for sure.
This is one of the out there collaborations.
It's really nice.
And
really
so
nice.
This one's brewed at the North Brewing Company, and then there's a black coffee IPA brewed at Northern Monk. And if you put the cans together, they form a map. It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark or something. That is good.
That is cool. That, that is funky. Good. No, I like that a lot.
That's really imaginative.
And it routes the map between the two breweries, going via some of Yorkshire's biggest attractions,
yeah, that is cool.
Of which include... No idea.
I've got one for you, Yorkshire Sculpture and Park.
And the Grand Theatre.
Yorkshire Sculpture Park.
And Kent Castle. Yeah. Which you think is in Kent.
Like Leeds Castle. Let's no map it. Leeds Castle.
Oh, no, Leeds
Castle's
in Kent. That's it. Shit.
Wow.
Okay, that's not for me. I've got to be honest.
No, you don't
I really like it.
You're always ruining my beer tastings. You're always like, oh, that's a bit...
No, but sometimes they are a bit challenging. Sorry. But that's challenging. But that's, I think...
Okay, I don't drink coffee. And basically, I'd rather have an espresso martini.
Okay. Yeah, well, that is a good drink.
I don't dislike it. But if I went to a pub and said, oh, can I just have a taste of that before getting a pint, I would not then go on and get a pint.
You don't have to drink a pint of it, Sam. Have you learned nothing from the last 10 weeks?
I was just
weeks?
Trying to be cool and rather than going, if I was going to get a half a pint.
Yeah, no, all right, okay.
You can have a half.
You can have a half.
But you can also
have
ice cubes in your wine if you want.
Yeah. Right. So, okay. So maybe I've done this wrong way around, but...
Going for the heaviest one first.
Well, now this is a nice palate cleanser. This is from the Vocation Brewery. And can I just say that the Northern Monk Brewery, which they do some really good stuff as well. They do lots of collaborations. They're really good at working with the local community, working with local artists, painters, musicians. They even have done a beer with a local fell runner who's called, he had a wicked name, he was called Ricky Lightfoot.
No way. He must have changed that legally.
Yeah. Let me just have a look.
I read in the paper that day about a nanny who changed her name to Mary Poppins.
Really?
But on Depol.
That's a bit sinister, isn't it? Because you're going to get a lot of work with not necessarily the right credentials. I'm sure she's got the right credentials.
I think she had a lot of experience.
Okay.
And I think she thought it was quite cool. Can I just say, I recognise this. I think we have some of these beers in our fridge. Do they also have a beer called Pride and Joy?
Yes, they do. This is the Vocation Brewery.
Yeah.
They've really sort of come up in the last couple of years. Really good brewery based in Hebden Bridge.
Which we know well, Ben.
We performed our show there, didn't we? Oh, it's a brilliant place. They've got the Trade Union Club there. Big shout out to the Trade Union Club. Go, comrades.
Just want to... Listeners, Sam has tried this beer.
She hasn't said that one.
Very interesting. Oh, wow. She's just pulled a face.
Right. Now, I want to give
Taste
you...
Taste of acorns.
Now...
Wow, cool.
It's aimed directly at squirrels, so there you are. You didn't know that. You know when the Tour de France started in Yorkshire? And it started up, and the first big climb in the Tour in Yorkshire was at the top of Craigvale, and it's located up there. And they've done really well. The brewer sort of cut his teeth in Nottingham at the place called the Blue Monkey Brewery, and they do wonderful beers, and a lot of them are based around the sort of aromatic West Coast hops, which Tom and I, having written a book, Good Beer Guide West Coast USA, buy it, all good bookshops.
No, please do.
Ben, I've got a question about your palate.
Okay.
Since we've been doing this podcast, we've been treated to, I think, beer with bread, beer with urine, beer with poo.
No, we haven't done a beer with poo.
Was it not?
The irrigation.
And I'm sure there was something else. Well, anyway, we've had some quite extreme beers. Do you have quite extreme beer tastes?
Good point, actually. We're tasting a lot of beers, aren't
well,
we?
That quite left field.
I will answer that question in the context of the tasting of the beer we have in front of us. Because this is called Heart and Soul, and this is a Session IPA.
Session IPA means... Well, IPA is American Pale Ale. I have learnt that.
India Pale Ale.
What did I say?
American.
That'd be IPA. Indian Pale Ale.
Yes.
I thought a session beer meant it was a lower alcohol,
so you can have more of a session. 4.4%.
So it doesn't necessarily affect the flavour, does it? It's the flavour that's big.
What they've done here is they've maintained that real aromatic, big,
really
hot,
punchy
forward profile, but without the alcohol.
But that is genius.
Which is a very hard thing to do, and I think they do it very well. It still is very floral and fragrant.
Mm.
And again, if you're not used to that, or some people find it too fragrant, a bit like, I suppose in the wine world you might say it's a bit like a Stramina or a Kiwi Sauvignon Blanc.
Absolutely.
But what I do there is I'd have that one, I'd go back to the other one, Sam, because the other one, all the fruit is really coming through in it now. It's quite smoky, that Vocation. I don't know what that is, Ben, the smoky bitterness about it.
I just get tropical fruit on this.
You don't get any of that smoke?
Mm-mm.
It's like a smoky malt to it.
I find it really nutty on the finish. Really, really nutty.
Well, what's interesting is how many different flavour profiles we're going through here for a 4.4% beer. They've done a lot of work there.
Anyway, I think it's,
so it's a talking point.
Which we just quickly...
Yeah, I want to try that one. Right, why is it called that?
The Salty Kiss, because Gose, or Gose, is a beer style that's long been forgotten, comes from Leipzig, and it traditionally was brewed with salt and coriander. Let me just pour. This is a gooseberry Gose.
Meaning what? Why is it called gooseberry Gose?
Because it'll have gooseberry in it.
Like, really?
It's kind of sour. It's refreshing.
Is this from Yorkshire as well?
This is from Yorkshire. This is from Magic Rock, who are based in Huddersfield, who have just been promoted to the Premiership. This is going to be...
I knew you wouldn't like it, Sam.
Oh, God, Sam. Well, maybe I just think Sam just doesn't
like
it.
Well, I don't like gooseberries.
Okay.
Well, look, I've spent enough time being one in life. And I don't really like a sour gooseberry. So I can understand why putting that into a beer is going to be challenging.
Can we do
for people.
Wheat beers?
I do actually
time,
quite like that beer. But
look. Oh, my God.
Do you love it?
Well...
It's hardly the syrup.
But this, chilled in a champagne flute, would be lovely.
No, it's nice. It's
champagne in a champagne flute,
would it be even tastier?
I tell you what, though, what's really interesting about all three of those is how completely distinctly different they all are.
Hebden Bridge, Leeds, Huddersfield.
Okay.
The point I'm trying to make, really, is that Yorkshire is synonymous with traditional bitters and cask ales. You know, you think about walking across the Yorkshire moors, go to a pub, you're going to get a really nice traditional pint. But then, on top of that, another layer of innovation and entrepreneurial verve with all these amazing breweries up there doing some really wacky stuff. And they do the good stuff well as well. Roosters, especially, I think, is doing some good, really good stuff. And traditionally, they've
in the past... I've got a really basic question.
Go on, right.
I thought ale wasn't fizzy.
The difference between ale and lager, to distill it down into its most basic thing, is... the way it is conditioned and the yeast that is used to ferment it. Now, lager is fermented with a lager yeast, and it's fermented at colder conditions. And the lager yeast will have a much more functional role within the fermentation.
Yep.
So it will eat up the sugars, expel alcohol and
CO2,
and very quietly spoken, very rarely leave any flavour off the back of it. An ale yeast will do the same thing, but it performs better at warm temperatures and will float to the top of the beer once it's done. So it's called top fermenting. And that will often leave a fruitier version of and leave a bit more flavours. You talked about wheat beers or Weiss beers earlier.
What are they?
That was an ale, but it's brewed with a proportion of wheat. But the yeast, often, especially with German Weiss beer, the yeast they use there will give off a really estuary, banana-y, clove type flavour to it. The
that's
yeast
like.
Is a phenomenal thing with
I love yeast. They're just, like in wine, they're just so amazing. So fundamental. But they are wonderfully distinctive. If you think about how many people must buy what you're talking about with the previous podcast about the Birmingham Post and beers recommended for festivals, and lots of lager can be pretty innocuous, right? So it's amazing to see these craft beers with tons of flavour, and they are so distinctive. And you've got one that's coffee, one for me that was like nuts, and one that was salt.
Yeah.
Like you say, they're bold, they're distinct, and they're quite brave. And if you're going to be an independent small brewery, you can't really make taste-alike beers to the big guys.
No, and beautifully packaged. They've all gone for really distinct packaging. All three of them
look great.
They look great on the shelf.
There's this
really,
beer,
really memorable.
Lastly, the North Brewing Double IPA.
Well,
I think that's
nice.
One of the best labels.
What is it, an owl?
I think it looks like a cat. It's 8.5%, so...
Crikey, Riley, it's like a glass of wine.
Yeah. One of the best cans I've seen on the market.
So basically, it's this beer. It's an orange, white and black can with this like hilarious little kind of graphic cat thing on. Anyway, it's very cute.
So if you're in Leeds...
Drink beer.
And go to the North Bar. North Bar in Leeds have been doing cool craft beer long before it was...
And where can you buy these beers from if you didn't want to go up north?
Well, Vocation, I got it from the Royal Whiskey Exchange in Holborn.
Okay.
But you can get them online. North Brewing Company, go onto their website. They've got lots of different places to sell them. So, yes, like I said, I mentioned lots of brewers before around the Yorkshire area. I mean, Sheffield, I think, is probably the capital of the craft brewing scene in the UK.
Never knew
How
that.
How about that?
Well, thanks, Ben. That was very interesting. And actually, you're right. I do mean when I'm with.
Wow.
When I'm with you. I actually do mean that. It's very interesting.
Don't worry. Next week, Sam, I'll bring some cooking lagers, which I'm sure you'll.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
So. Thanks, Ben. That was brilliant.
It was, wasn't it?
Really enjoyed that. Learned a lot. Namely, that I didn't like any of them. But, no, I'm kidding. They're delicious. Very distinctive. And now...
Distinctive.
We have Tom. Oh. It's your Legend of Liquor today.
It is.
What have you got for us?
I'm going to talk about a legend of tequila. And I'm going to talk about a lady. A lady who is arguably not real. She's a goddess. And her name is Mayahual, and she was an Aztec goddess, the goddess of fertility. She was worshipped in the 13th century, a deity who proffered pubescence and watched over wombs. And she manifested herself as the magui plant, or the agave. Mm-hmm. But perhaps the most important element of her story is that she had 400 breasts.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a lot of
boobs. It's a lot of breasts. And she had 400 children. And I think really she went through a lot of bad times, like a lot of deities. There are stories about her betrayals and martyrdom, painful deaths. She went through a fair amount of that. But having 400 breasts, I'm sure you would agree, is probably the biggest burden
she had to manage. The 400 children.
Well, the fact that she had 400 children and that she fed them with these breast oils.
A massive coincidence that her breasts... mirrored the exact number of children she had.
But really, you'd only need 200 kids for 400 breasts, wouldn't you, really? Because you'd take turns on each breast. We all have children, and we've all witnessed a breastfeed. So if for no other reason today, we should celebrate Mayahual for her breastfeeding.
You need one of those very big kind of muslin...
capes.
Yeah. To sort of guys in the Starbucks.
But breasts are only part of the story, as impressive as they are. But she did start life as the goddess of fertility and feeling fertile, as she no doubt did. She got involved in another god, the god of medicine, who's called Paticatl. Excuse my pronunciation.
Your Aztec is...
It's gone, it's gone. he was playing pat a cake on her love bumps. And the grandmother of Mayahual was pretty cheesed off about all of this. And she set a load of demons out on this pair, and it wasn't good.
on one pair? 200 pairs.
On the pair of people. And well, she didn't have the breasts at this stage. She was just a normal chick. And she got off with this guy, and grandma wasn't happy. So they hunted them down, and they turned them into a tree, and it was all messy business. You know, we've all been there.
Boy meets girl.
And she was buried. The branches were buried, and much like Jesus in one of the more familiar stories, Mayahual rose again. But when she did, she came back as this plant. And then she had the 400 children, and then she, when she came out, she had all her breasts, which are on an agave plant, all those different spines. So this is where the story starts to relate closer to the agave plant. Now, for listeners who don't know what the agave plant is, the agave is the central ingredient to tequila. Now, she was a very important person in Aztec culture. They worshipped her in the form of this agave, and they used the agave for everything in their life. So they made shoes out of it, they made needles for sewing, they made clothes, buildings,
like roofs.
It was very much like cork. It was a very important plant, but most importantly, they baked it. And then they squeezed out the juices, which were sugary, and they allowed them to naturally ferment, and that gave them pulque.
Pulque.
A fermented agave juice. And this was what came out of Mayahual's breasts, purportedly. This milk was an alcoholic.
God that
so
keeps on giving.
She is amazing. Out of her boobies came booze. Yeah. I mean, those are some boozy boobies.
Maybe not so good for their children.
Well, they were. But should stress there as well, they were rabbits. They weren't actual children. They were rabbits. And the bunnies, the little bunnies, became the gods of intoxication. The Aztecs had gods for everything.
This is the trippiest story I've ever heard.
They had gods for everything. They had a god for a hangover, as well as all these gods for different forms of intoxication. Pretty crazy
this
time.
This is a Mexican goddess.
Yeah. Aztecs. Yeah. The Americas. I mean, their culture spread up.
Latin America.
It spread into various... In fact, across the borders into North America and further south. It was a big part of their ritual, this agave, and they drank this alcoholic beverage so that they could get closer to the gods. So they could actually communicate with the gods, which was the forerunner, really, for tequila. And agave is still at the centre of that story. Now, the Spanish came over, the conquistadors, they butchered all the Aztecs, killed off all this amazing culture that they had. Thanks, guys.
Bit of a downer.
Yeah, a bit of a downer. But they made brandy and they brought distillation techniques with them in the 17th century. And when they found this pulque, they weren't so into it, but they distilled the Aztec pulque, and that's what gave us tequila. So in that sense, Maya Hall is the mother of tequila, which makes her a very important person. The agave is still right at the centre of that story. It's an incredible ingredient. It comes from the asparagus family.
So it is in tequila. The agave is, is fundamental to tequila.
They still do. And they still bake these agaves in the same way that the Aztecs would have done, and then crush out the juices to ferment. So that process still exists. And pulque is still drunk in Mexico. But then they would distill it.
I heard that pulque now in Mexico is becoming a bit of a cult drink again, in the same way that these things go in circles.
Well, if you go
people, obviously it's in very small pockets.
Yeah, and it's a roadside drink. It's a bit like if you go to the Caribbean and you find sort of fermented cane juices.
Or scrumpy in Somerset.
Yeah, all that. At the heart of tequila, there's still this sort of rustic agricultural process, and these agaves grow for 7 to 12 years. Men go out into the fields to pick them by hand, jimadores, and they use a jima tool, which is like a hoe, and they cut off all the spiky leaves and they get the big piñas and they take them down to bake them. Massive piñas they are. And they bake them just as they would back in the Aztec time. And if it wasn't for Maya Hall and all her crazy shenanigans, who knows whether the agave would have been quite as revered as it was. Patacatl, he went on he gave us mescaline.
So he went
other way.
He got detreed and gave us something
else.
He
came back as something else, which is a bit more mind-bending. And don't do drugs. Drugs are for mugs. But do drink tequila.
Yeah, she's got her knockers. But we like her.
Indeed. Nice one, Ben.
That was fascinating.
Good. And concise. That's what I liked about it.
Yeah.
Ish.
No, it's brilliant. Excellent. And that does conclude today's podcast.
Well done, everyone. I think there was some great energy in this room.
Yeah. Considering that, good info, with you guys.
Good info, good information.
Yeah. If you've enjoyed this podcast and like to learn more about drink, then you can see Ben and Tom, the Thinking Drinkers, in our live show where we'll be tasting alcohol, making you laugh. We're on tour. All dates and ticket prices can be found on our website, www.thinkingdrinkers.com. Please buy a ticket.
And if you want any more wine information, then go to my site, www.themistressofwine.com. Okay then, so all that remains, I think, is to say goodbye. Tune in for the next one. And thanks very much. Bye.
Cheers.
Cheerio.
This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.